As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
What's up, everybody? It's another Monday. It's Haley Salvian back from vacation. Ian Mendez is on vacation now, so I'm here with Sean Gentile for the Monday show of the Athletic Hockey Show. You can tell I'm very rusty because I said Monday and show multiple times in about 15 seconds, but that's all right. What's up, Sean? Thanks for joining me. Pinch hitting for Mendez.
You're doing great. Also, you're welcome. Very, very busy right now. Lots of news happening, work being done. Crazy, crazy time to be alive.
It's a crazy time to come back from vacation with multiple transactions and things going on across the league. I was taking a look at the the top most recent headlines at The Athletic, and
brutal.
Jonathan Huberdeau's extension is still at
They're
the
brutal.
Top. I was like, ooh, oh boy, when did that even happen? Goodness.
I feel bad for Jesse Granger. He had to write something last week because he had to deal with the Robin Lehner, hip injury disaster. I think he was the only person on staff who produced anything last week. I don't know if that may or may not be true. Do not fact check me on that. But yeah,
and
Jesse,
Fluto.
Jesse
got
Jesse
Fluto
doing
too. Some stuff.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, they're the ones who are they're rowing the boat here.
Yeah.
If it weren't for them, who knows what would happen?
Who knows what would be good? But you know what? I'm also annoyed that Jesse had a Thursday show because now we can't really talk about the Bruins or Robin Leonard because he already did it. But you know what? We were probably going to do it anyways.
You know what we should have done? Was gone back and listened to the Thursday show and transcribed everything Jesse said.
and then just
read it. just to see if anybody would notice.
That'd be funny. I wonder how many people listen to every single day, or there's people who are just like, no, I'm a Monday gal. I'm a Tuesday gal or guy.
I've heard a lot of people really hate the Tuesday show.
That makes sense. Those guys are so annoying. That Greg Custance.
The one, Greg? What's his name?
Greg?
The one host. Everybody hates him.
What's wrong with Greg Custance?
Gerg.
He just seems really mean.
Did you see what I tweeted before the show?
No.
I was just like, what would everybody talk about on a hockey podcast if they had to do it in a couple minutes?
Did anyone respond?
My buddy Pat Damp, who works for one of the TV stations here in Pittsburgh, he said, Webster's Dictionary defines hockey as, which is like... the opening of the dam, when you have absolutely nothing, that's what you go with. So I feel like that's basically what the first segment is going to be here until we talk to Haley.
Oh yeah, no, Haley. Hey, let me do that.
That's fine. I was just teeing you.
I was getting ready for it. You took it. You brought up the tweet first.
Amateurs.
So in the midst of all this nothing, we have procured a great guest. I don't know if that was even the right word.
Yeah,
we have acquired.
I Yeah, I don't know if that's something you say about a person. I think that's I think that's more when you buy something at a store or steal something.
Someone yeah.
Falls off a truck.
My bad. Andrew Mangiapane is going to be joining the show today. Very exciting. He's had, you know, he had a big year last year, 35 goal season, signed a big contract extension to stay with the Calgary Flames, 3 years, $5.8 million. Just another piece of that really wild offseason that the Flames had. So Andrew Mangiapane is going to be joining us later in the show. Excited about that. We asked for some fan questions, but a lot of them were just about bread and what kind of bread he likes. Kind of bread does he get at Subway?
Some vague anti-Italian sentiments in there. I don't know if I really appreciate that. Boppity-boopity.
Yeah, and the like. But I'm actually really curious about this Twitter thread that you posted because some of these responses are really funny. Yeah.
See, this is great. This is like – we're in mailbag season in general mm-hmm. here. Like that's the funny thing is if you go through all the stories that have been posted in the NHL section of the Athletic for the last couple weeks, it's like – I did a mailbag, and there's Bruins mailbags, and Avs yeah. mailbags, and Oilers. Every writer is like, "All right, we gotta outsource this. We need help." So this is just kind of in step with that sentiment.
Yeah. So you know, obviously there are some things going on, and these are really funny, and we can maybe get to them at the end of the show after we talk to to Andrew because some of these are great. For example, why is an armpit an anatomical term, but leg pit is not. Would love to get into that.
Yeah, we need to bring on
Andrew Mangiapane.
Yeah, we should just ask Andrew about that. I was going to say bring on like an anatomical biologist or physiologist.
No.
Or
do somebody. You call it a leg pit? Yes or no?
People don't call them leg pits? I thought that's
that's weird.
That was standard.
Yeah. Moving on, again, there are some things going on in the world, or it's more that things aren't going on that makes it notable. There's still quite a few free agents who have not signed, or at least have not been announced that they have signed. We're looking at Nazem Kadri at the top of that list. I feel like we've been talking about him for months now, and parts of it are great. I think his story since leaving the Toronto Maple Leafs via trade has been great. I did see on Twitter that he has his day with the cup and he's going to be, I believe he's bringing it to a mosque in London where he's from. And that's going to be the first time that the Stanley Cup is at that kind of place of worship. I'm going to have to pull this tweet up exactly, but it's just so great. I mean, from everything that he went through being traded from, you know, the hometown team he always wanted to play with. I just found this tweet.
Yeah.
His day with the cup is August 27th. His celebrations will begin at noon at the London Muslim Mosque. And the tweet said, I believe this is the first time the Stanley Cup will visit a mosque. So that's such a big moment for Kadri, for his family, for the Muslim community. I mean, and again, just with the backdrop of what he went through this season with the horrible hate-filled messages he was receiving to, you know, win the Stanley Cup and be able to bring it to, you know, a mosque and celebrate with his community that gets so much crap. That's just so special. And Kadri's just had such a great story.
Yeah, not just this season either, you know? Like I think that's a good opportunity for people to whether they know already and just want to remind themselves or have never heard it before, just the story of Nazem Kadri, the kind of mm-hmm. stuff he dealt with coming up and it is kind of a nice little mini valedictory to his career in general, but it's also whenever this happens, it's going to be a reminder that he doesn't have an NHL team for
exactly.
next season yet. Technically, I'm like yes. half expecting him to like lift up the cup at the party or whatever, and there's going to be like a 5-year, $35 million deal with the New York Islanders, like taped to the bottom or something. Like mm-hmm. maybe that's where it was.
He's just going to lift the cup up and wearing an Islanders jersey or something. I feel as everyone just gotten to that point where we're assuming that this is just Lou being yeah. Lou, and he has a contract for Kadri already in the drawer, and he's got Dobson extended, and he's got everybody extended, and maybe another guy here or there. Maybe he brought in Evan Rodriguez, Sonny Milano, every guy who has not signed yet who's on the UFA boards just has a contract in the drawer at Lou Lamoriello's desk.
How many teams do you think, according to Cap Friendly, are above the cap right now?
Above the salary cap? Yeah, like five?
Right. Wrong. It is 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
But is that that's probably before 13. Teams throw people on LTIR, though. Mm-hmm. So that's always like a tough exercise.
It is, but it's also instructive because, you know, maybe there are also guys, you know, who need to come off LTIR, right? Like that's what the Carolina Hurricanes, for example, need to account for Jake Gardner coming off.
Right, it's but not Pacioretty's going on.
Yeah, right, that's true. I mean, it's not...
It's not an exact science, but...
No, but it's instructive, I think, to the amount of money that's available league-wide. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect. These things never are. You gotta crack it open and account for some other stuff. But 13 teams, as it stands right now, not accounting for LTIR or whatever, are over the cap. And then another, 10 have...
Like a million or two.
Yeah, have $4 million or less.
But I'm pretty sure the Islanders are one of those teams. They don't have, when you account for the extensions, they have to have, the bad contracts on the books. I feel like they have potentially dead money. Like they're one of those teams who don't have a lot of money. So obviously there's something else in the hopper
for sure.
The New York Islanders to fit Nazem Kadri under the ceiling.
Well, and Noah Dobson and whatever else. They have million. They have a little bit more than $11 million today. Right, there's 19 players on the roster right now. Got to deal with Dobson. If we assume that Kadri's going there, if we assume that there's a couple other,
and what do we think that Kadri's going to sign for? Sorry to cut you off, but I think most projections would have him at this point in the offseason at like a 7x7.
I kind of pulled that number out when I was making up a contract to be stuck under the cup, but I feel like 7 makes sense for him now, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's 32. He had a career year on one of the most stacked teams in the league, and, he had a 100-point pace, and that's great, but you look at his best years in Toronto and stuff, and he was still, a 30-goal, 50, 60-point guy, but, and that's great, but that's not 100 points, so teams have to find that middle ground of paying for Nazem Kadri at who he is now and who he's going to be over the term of that contract. And I feel like that's probably a bit of why we didn't see him sign a massive ticket on day one of free agency. I wouldn't be shocked that the market wasn't what him and his agents wanted it to be after the year that he had. But, GMs know what they're looking at here. And there's no money. There's no money in the league. We're going on such all these roundabout ways, but it's a podcast, so this is fine. This is our show. We can talk about what we want in the order that we want it.
That's a dig at Mendez, I think.
No, I would never. I feel like we almost don't talk enough about the way that the pandemic has just blown up the cap and teams' long-term plans. I mean, I feel like we talk about it, but we talk all the time about this team's capped out and that team took out too much money for this guy and they overpaid this guy. Well, when a lot of those deals were signed, teams were expecting that at this point in 2022-23 season, the cap was going to be at like $90 million or something. Think about, we've talked about this before off mic, Leafs are taking it on the teeth about the John Tavares deal because it hasn't aged great, but it would have been fine if the cap was $90 million.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, it's not. So now they're paying the price. I think it's one of those things where, especially you see it was the standard response to combat the sticker shock of whether it was Tavares, whether it was whatever, I had Rasmus Ristolainen, or you pick a bad deal and he signed for another year, a year or two more than he should have, and another million more than he should have, but. In 2023, the cap will be fine. Well, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's a few million dollars at least below where we thought it would be. And that puts the squeeze on, you know, maybe not Nazem Kadri, because that's, I think we can just kind of put that in a drawer, right? Along with this contract. We don't need to think about that. I think it squeezes the guys like, you know, the Evan Rodriguez's of the world who aren't, you know, all-star caliber guys, but quasi-useful players who are coming off, you know, maybe a career season or whatever. And they're the ones that are still kind of stuck on the market without as much as they were expecting. The thing with Kadri too, I know you're talking about, you know, 7x7. I feel like the years is where he's really going to take a bath here. Like he's going to be 32 if not by the start of the season, then really early in it. I don't know how you sign him for 7 years at this point. I don't know who on the board in terms of teams with money to spend and teams where Nazem Kadri would like to land are going to have that kind of year number to offer him. So I don't know. Maybe we see $7 million a year for 5 years or whatever. But it is. It's tough to look at this group and see, A, teams that want Nazem Kadri, and B, teams that Nazem Kadri would want to sign with. And I think that's why, you know, so many people have them pegged in the island, because of Lou's track record, A, and because of the fit for player and team.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Frank Saravalli did report that it was premature to say that Kadri and the Islanders already had a deal in place, and said that he was, you know, the Islanders were just one of the teams that Kadri and his camp were speaking to. So it seems like
when did Frank say that?
Let me pull it up. I guess, you know, last week, in the middle of the week. So on the 9th, so like last Tuesday. But I just feel like the longer this goes on, the more people just assume like, eh. it's done. It's in the drawer.
Yeah, but, well, you alluded to this too, right? Like you're saying, yeah, the Islanders have a lot of work. They have cap space, but they have a lot of work to be done, whether it's the Dobson extension, like, you know, whatever else. This is no easy fit for them either. Like, are they gonna have to move Josh Bailey? Are they gonna need to send money out? It certainly seems like they will. Think of it this way: if we're saying that Kadri's gonna get $7 million AAV or somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe a little bit less, and then if they do a deal with like a bridge with Dobson, that 3.5 or 4 maybe, mm-hmm. like they're at the number, and they only have 21 players on the roster. So it's impossible, like, for all the money that they do have and for all like the half jokey stuff people have said, like, oh, like Lou's got it in the drawer or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's work to be done to make it all fit, because it isn't just about Kadri. It's about other guys on that roster, and it's about, you know, getting it done in a way that keeps them under the number.
Yep. And we had the Islanders as, you know, somewhere we thought would be interested in Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau, two of the Flames players who were, you know, on the market this offseason. And again, like with both of those exercises, that was going to be really hard to fit under the cap. They would have had to move, you know, significant assets out to make enough room to sign Johnny Gaudreau in the UFA market, and would have had to make significant moves to give Calgary the kind of package they'd be looking for, especially in hindsight, knowing that the Flames got Huberto, Uyghur, first round pick, and a prospect. And the, you know, ability to sign Tkachuk to the kind of contract that he was looking for. Obviously, Kadri is a step lower because, you know, maybe he's looking for $9 million, but I don't think he's going to get it. If team was going to pay him $9 million, he would have got that by now.
That would happen already.
The one thing, and this is probably the last point we should make about Kadri/Islanders, is I've seen a couple of takes out there about moving Matt Barzal for Nazem Kadri, and I just want to understand why people are saying that.
I think the thought is that Barzal's just gonna want to break the bank in a year or two,
So you move him for a 31-year-old?
No, I think it's people just losing their minds over and playing, you know, trying to figure out. This is like the end game of a half a failure of an offseason for the Islanders, because their issue last year was that Barzal You know, they
didn't have a line mate.
And they were offensively terrible. And, you know, for as good as Ilya Sorokin was and whatever else, like that team couldn't score goals. So, yeah, Lou's goal headed into the offseason was pretty plain. There's a reason they were attached to Johnny Gaudreau, and there's a reason it seemed like, you know, that maybe they would have made sense as a landing ground for Tkachuk. Those are all star, like top tier wingers, which they lack. So now it's like this game they're playing, it's like, well, do we really need a center? Not as bad as we need a winger, but we also need some kind of offensive ability, because otherwise we're going to come out of this offseason with a goose egg, basically, with a team that for a lot of different reasons failed to meet expectations last year. So I think people are just kind of trying to fit, and there's so much uncertainty with whether it's Kadri or Dobson or all these other mystery deals that we, you know, that we're hearing about. People are trying to figure out, like, what kind of puzzle pieces are there? What's Lou going to do? What does this mean for the future? Because there's just no – because we're a month into free agency and there's still just a huge, huge level of uncertainty. And I think that makes people crazy. So they start doing stuff like, should they move Barzal for cover? Whatever. Like, mm-hmm. They move out Barzal so they can sign Kadri and then use the money that they save on Barzal to do what exactly? Because there's not really any good. The whole thing, yeah. It's making people lose their minds.
Right. It's just the same thing. And, you know, this is something I, you know, said about the Flames and Tkachuk. And obviously that ended up happening not for the same reasons. Like when Tkachuk had a down season, you know, 2 years ago, he had a pretty off year. And it was all, he's not going to be worth this $9 million qualifying offer. Get rid of him. Trade Matthew Tkachuk. And it was like, if you move Matthew Tkachuk for whatever reason, you have to replace Matthew mm-hmm. Tkachuk. And that's the thing with Matt Barzal. Like, Nazem Kadri is not a Barzal replacement in no. the same way, you know? And how are you going to replace that guy? Like, those are, like, I know Barzal didn't have a great year last year, but, like, those are the guys that you shell out money for. Mm-hmm. The young, skilled, face of the franchise guys. Like, Barzal's not the piece that you lose to sign Nazem Kadri in free agency. It's the Josh Bailey's and the overpaid older players, not the young stars. Sure. And I know Barzal's maybe not on that level right now because of the year that he had. But he hasn't had a winger. Last season, he did not have a winger to play with. And that's why, as you said, it seemed so important to get a Johnny Gaudreau or a Matthew Tkachuk on the Islanders so Matt Barzal could have a skilled winger to play with to maximize the fact that you have Matt Barzal on your roster.
I think something that we all could do well to remember here, we get lessons on it periodically. We saw it with the Flames. We saw it with what happened with Johnny Gaudreau. We saw it with what Matthew Tkachuk said after Johnny Gaudreau left. And I think this is probably part of where, you know, Islanders fans being like, should we just trade Barzal now while we can? I don't think we do this enough. We have to account for what players might want down the road.
Mm-hmm. You have especially to, more now.
Yeah, maybe. Like, yeah, of course the Islanders should want to extend Matt Barzal. Like, of course they should want to keep him in the fold because he's, you know, a 1A center, right? Like he's really, really good and he's still young and you assume that maybe he's not going to be a 100-point guy like he looked like when he was 18, but he's a building block and whatever else. Maybe he doesn't want to play for the New York Islanders. That's what happened to the Calgary Flames. Maybe he wants to go somewhere else. Like these players do have agency and they get to a point, they get to a point where they have leverage and we are so used to in this sport seeing players cede that leverage mm-hmm. and sign long-term extensions with the team that drafted them whenever they're coming off of their entry-level deal and then a two-year bridge deal and then comes the big deal. That's the way it works because that's the way hockey players operate most of the time. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to remember, whether it's media, whether it's fans, you know, whatever, that these guys at a certain point in their career can decide what they want to do. And not everybody wants to play with the team that drafted them and signed them to their first two deals. Sometimes they want to leave. So maybe that's part of what's driving, you know, the Islanders fans being like, should we do this? Should we trade him now? Blah, blah, blah. Because
you know, it's what's the ripple effect of Matthew mm-hmm. Tkachuk showing how much control you can have over the situation. I feel like, you know, and this is just recency bias because we're talking about these last, you know, 5, 7, 8 years in the league. But, and, you know, if correct me if I'm forgetting something, but I feel like Austin Matthews was like the one big superstar that kind of went and took that bridge deal. I think he took that one first, signing for like a shorter term versus like a max 8-year extension to lock in Toronto forever. I was like, no, I'm going to do this for now, maximize my next contract after I've been in the league for a little while. But, you know, I think Matthew Tkachuk is the perfect example of a player using their leverage and having the most control over their money, their situation, where they're going to be. He signed that 3-year deal to have as much control over his life as possible. Mm-hmm. And the way that it was backloaded with the $9 million qualifying offer secured the bag. So not only did he get a chance to say, I'm going to stay here for 3 more years, and then I'm going to reconvene and say, I want to be here? And if he does and if he doesn't, he's going to be due a ticket. And that's exactly what we just saw. And I wonder, you know, if more players are going to see that as an example of the kind of control they can have over the situation. Like you said, you don't have to be with the team that drafted you. And I don't want to freak Islanders fans out. We're not saying that this is what's going to happen with Matt Barzal and he's going to be like, screw this, I don't want to be here. But maybe that is part of, you know, the maybe fans are projecting what just happened to Calgary onto their own situation with like, oh God, what's going to happen here?
Like,
players know their control now. Oh God, what's next?
It's like, is he happy? Does he want to play for a Lou Lamoriello team? Does he want to play for a defense first team? Is he pissed that Jordan Eberle left and they didn't replace him? Like, there's a bunch of unknowns out there. Mm-hmm. So, and we're not like, again, like this is, we're just BSing on a podcast in the middle of August.
When
so
there's
whatever.
Nothing to talk about.
But if there is one takeaway, like I said, it is remembering that, like, because again, we see it over and over and over again. Connor McDavid gets drafted by the Oilers. The Islanders?
You said Oilers.
Yeah, like just he gets drafted by the Oilers, signs a long-term deal with the Oilanders, and then that's just kind of it.
You just said it again. Was that on purpose?
What do you think?
I don't know.
So just remember, like, not every team needs to sign, or not every player needs to sign with the team that drafts them. Sometimes guys want to leave. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yep. Let's move on. Not a whole lot happening in the NHL world. You know, Robin Lehner is having surgery. The surgery that he could have had last season, but he was told that he actually didn't need it. I don't even know what happened there. That whole debacle. And now he's having surgery. Now he's out. So we don't even need to talk about it.
Okay. No,
my only question is, like, how is Jack Eichel feeling right now? But he's probably fine. He's making $10 million and he lives in Vegas.
I'm sure
Jack Eichel's doing all right.
Yeah, Jack's making the turn at a golf course right now. And he's doing fine. I don't want to talk about this anymore. What I do want to talk about.
Since I'm on
a podcast with the lead national women's hockey writer for The Athletic now, somebody had a job change last month.
That's true.
It's Haley.
It's me.
Let's talk about the Team USA roster. Mm-hmm. They released it for the upcoming Women's World Championships. Those are in Denmark at the end of the month. The lead national women's hockey writer for The Athletic will be covering that in person.
It's very exciting. If anyone has any recommendations in Denmark, let me know. It's in Herning.
Freddie Anderson's going to give you a call here.
Yeah, Fred.
Whatever. I don't know. Who is another?
Frederick, if you are listening, please tell me where to eat in Herning.
I can't think of any other Danish players. Is that bad? Talk to me about this Team USA roster, please. Just tell me. tell me what's changed. Tell me who's good.
Oh, who's good? I think it's an interesting roster. There's, you know, the tricky part with analyzing a training camp roster is that it's kind of their summer festival. Mm-hmm. So USA Hockey and Hockey Canada both did the same thing where they had, you know, 140 players at camp for about a week. And then they divvy the camp up at the end of it for the U18 roster, the kind of it used to be U22. It's like the development team, so like the collegiate players not quite under 18 but not quite ready for the senior national team, and then the senior national team. So they kind of swap it up into the three pillars, and obviously the big one is this world championship team. And there's some players who are just no-brainers. Hillary Knight's back, and I think, you know, this is going to be another big one for her. This is going to be her 12th Women's World Championship, which is the most in USA Hockey history. And she already broke Cammy Granato's record last year. You know, she's been a record breaker, and she's going to continue to do that. And I spoke with the head coach of the team, John Robleski, and he said, you know, you just know what you're getting with Hillary Knight. She looks really good. Her last scrimmage game was excellent. She still has that passion and the drive for the game. So even though Hillary Knight's been around for a while, you know, she's still going to be a big and important piece of the team. Mm-hmm. No Brianna Decker. She wasn't at camp. She had that injury at the Olympics. You know, what was it? Game 2.
Yep.
Of the last Olympics, which was so unfortunate. She's such a talent, so she's not going to be there. Still kind of – she had a successful surgery, uh-huh. You know, but there's still kind of a rehabbing process for her. So no Brianna Decker for Team USA at the World Championships. A lot of players are back. Alex Carpenter. The defense looks pretty similar. No Megan Bozic, but, you know, Lee Steckline – Megan Keller, Kayla Barnes, they're all back in the fold. There's a couple of new players that are going to be on the team this year for the first time. Hannah Bilka is one.
I would like to hear specifically about Hannah Bilka, because I've never watched her play. It seems like she's good.
She is really fun, really skilled. And again, I spoke to the head coach of the team, and you know, you've spoken to John before. He mm-hmm. was the US NTDP coach. So he, you know, coached guys like Matthew Tkachuk and guys like Trevor Zegras. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, to kind of lean on some of his past experience on the men's side at USA Hockey, he was like, Hannah is like coaching Trevor Zegras. Like Trevor Zegras level skill, the things she can do with the puck, the excitement when she has the puck on her stick, the things she can do on the ice, her vision, her playmaking ability, her creativity. This is a really young and exciting player. So she's going to be somebody to watch out for. She's really young. She's making, again, this is her first senior national team roster. So that's a big one to look at. Uh-huh. Plays at Boston College. I hope I didn't mess that up. I'm pretty sure it's Boston College, not BU. Another first timer is Taylor Heise. Forgive mm-hmm. me if I mispronounced her last name, but she won the Patty Kazmaier as the best college player in the nation last season. Another really exciting player. She's a natural center, but she has, you know, wing capability and a really, really good shot. So if you see her line up for a one-timer, that's something to look out for. I think some players to be excited about at this World Championships, players who had the last Worlds and the last Olympics under their belt and now are a little bit more comfortable on the team. They have, you know, more experience at the international senior level. Grace Sumwinkle is one of my favorite players to watch. She is the ultimate power forward. Pain in the ass to play against. Her scoring touch hasn't always been there at the senior level, but once that kind of develops and once the game slows down for her as she starts to, you know, get used to playing at this level, she's going to be, you know, just a monster. She has that cutback move below the hash mark that is like, it's just gross. She's good on her edges. She's really strong. Really, really exciting player to watch. Another player who we've talked about before, Sean, is Abby Rock. She's kind of the player that people are just like waiting mm-hmm. in anticipation for her breakout. And I think John said, you know, getting to watch her in person at camp, you realize how smart she is. And her ability to make the players around her better because of the decision she makes with the puck. She's really good in tight. She's hard to knock off. She makes really good plays. Her pace hasn't always been there, but the way she sees the game kind of helps. So I am, as an Abby Rock, like I'm waiting for the Abby Rock breakout. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of her game. I'm excited and hopeful at what I've heard from the coaching staff about her in the sense that, you know what, maybe instead of putting her in the bottom six and not playing her a lot like the old coaching staff did at the World mm-hmm. Championships, maybe she'll be on the top line.
Sumwinkle, right? Like Grace Sumwinkle barely played.
Carolyn Harvey barely played. All these players, you know, they cut the bench mm-hmm. quick and often. Joel Johnson did at the Worlds and the Olympics, but I'm kind of, you know, cautiously optimistic, not even cautiously, I'm optimistic about Abby Rock at this world championship because it sounds like she's going to be someone who plays on the line with somebody like Zumwinkel or Hillary Knight, who can just get her the puck and let Hillary Knight rip. And I think that's something she didn't always get the opportunity to do. When Decker went down at the Olympics, Rock did get elevated at the lineup and looked good and comfortable. So I think that's going to be something to watch is the Abby Rock breakout. There's a lot to be excited about if you're an American hockey fan, I think. One player who didn't make it was
Abby Murphy.
She's only 20 years old. And she was on the Olympic team. So she's not in the fold. Emily Matheson was working to come back after the birth of her child. She's Mike Matheson's wife, or Mike Matheson is
Mike Matheson,
Emily
her husband.
Matheson's husband. she did not make the team. And I think there was a lot of people pushing and like pulling for her. Like they really wanted her to be there, but that's not an easy comeback. And the thing about this kind of world championship roster is it's year one of an Olympic quad. So that's right. Kind of the 4 years where it's you're building for the next Olympics. And you kind of have to balance wanting to win a world championship in year one while also ensuring that you're building the best possible group for year four when you hit the Olympics. So it's like, do you turn the page on some of these players in favor of a younger piece to build them towards the Olympics? Because what you don't want is a bunch of players who have one international game under their belt going to the Olympics for the first time. And the last Olympics was tricky because a lot of players didn't have that experience because of the pandemic. But now it's much more controllable. And it's like, okay, let's get Hannah Bilka into the fold. But also not putting them in before they're ready too. Like these are players who earned their spots on the roster. Like they're not just there because it's like, let's get them warmed up. They're there because they earned it. And you can kind of start to see the bones of this next gen of USA Hockey, while also understanding that Hillary Knight still deserves to be there and Kendall Coyne Schofield still deserves to be there because they're still excellent hockey players despite their age and that kind of 4 year time jump. So I'll be interested to see what they can do. Canada set the bar really high at the Olympics. That was one of the most offensively dominating teams I think I've ever seen at the Olympic level. So I think I'm excited to see what USA looks like.
It feels like this roster is going to, like it's built the way we thought maybe the Olympic roster was built, where like one of the narratives surrounding the American team coming to the Olympics was like, all right, we need to figure out a way to work in the Abby Rocks and the Grace Zumwinkels of the world because you need to have like this next cohort of players coming in. That's obviously not what happened. You know, it's clear that when the game started and when push came to shove, it was Joel Johnson playing with, you know, old reliable players who we'd already won games with. Well, that's understandable to an extent. You know, the execution we can make of it what you will. Now it's like, okay, this is year one of the cycle, like you said. Now more than ever is the time to work in the Hannah Bilkas and the Abby Rocks and players like that to get them going in time. Taylor Heiss or Heiss or I'm sorry, I feel like one of us has mispronounced her name. Players like that, you know, get them rolling, because I think a lot of people were expecting to see that at the Olympics, and that's clearly not what happened.
And I do think that we will see a commitment to like properly kind of divvy up ice time in the group stages. I think you'll see Robleski roll four lines and 3D pairs. They're going to bring 13. You bring 13 forwards. They might not use all of them, but I think you're going to see them try to spread the ice time in the group stages. But then as they get closer to, say, a gold medal game, don't be shocked if he cuts the bench in the gold medal game if the fourth line's not ready for the moment or a young player's not ready for the moment. That's kind of a normal thing. But, you know, spreading the wealth when you can is going to be really important. And I think they're going to commit to doing that, which is great.
That's what group games are for.
Yeah.
What's the time difference in Denmark? How far? What are we looking at here? 8 hours?
7 hours?
7?
So
that's doable.
Yeah, the first day of the tournament is August 25th. Mm-hmm. And then the gold medal game is September 4th. So it's going to be 11 days-ish with tons of great hockey. I'm going to be there. It's going to be fun. Everyone should watch and read on The Athletic.
Great plug. Way to go. Yes. What a pro.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, everyone, we're back finally with Andrew Mangiapane from the Calgary Flames. He left us waiting for a while. We're actually going to now blame our guest for all the nonsense we talked about for 30 minutes. So if you didn't enjoy the show,
you had nothing to do with it. This is wrong. This is wrong.
Oh, sorry, guys. Back in traffic there for a little bit. I just blame the city, so that's all I'm blaming it on.
Do you have any like Toronto traffic like horror stories? Because I'm in Pittsburgh, so I love hearing people just be like, "Oh yeah, I got stuck between such and such for like 2 hours or whatever."
Yeah, it's just all dependent on time wherever you're trying to go, right? You really gotta, I guess, plan it out, right? If I'm trying to go downtown for a dinner, like I know Sean Monahan and I just went for a dinner the other day, and like we were both just stuck in traffic. And it was, and we were both late to it, and I was like, okay, it was fine. Like, there's only one way in, one way out, basically. So it is what it is, but you just got to plan around it.
Wait, where did you guys go? Because I just moved back to the area, and I don't know what's around here anymore. Recommendations.
Harbor 60. It was just the steakhouse.
Classic.
Downtown. First time, I think, basically going there. So
I used to work at a High Steakhouse. When I was in university, it's a good spot.
Yeah, no, I do. A lot of the guys go when we're back in Calgary to Highest there.
Yeah, it's a good spot.
Yep.
This has been Toronto Steakhouse Talk with Andrew and Haley. How are we doing?
Yeah, thanks for joining us. That's it. That's all we got for you. But no, really, we just first want to say congratulations on the season you had and the contract that you signed a couple weeks ago. We talked about it earlier in the show, but 3 years, $5.8 million AAV. Andrew, if you were to like tell 16-year-old Andrew Mangiapane playing in the GTHL, the season you had and what the deal you just signed, like what would he have said if you told him?
Yeah, you probably would have laughed at myself or whatever, right? Obviously, I've had a kind of up and down roller coaster to kind of get where I am, but I wouldn't, I guess, trade it for the world, right? I think it made me the player that I am today.
Can you maybe expand on that? I know, we spoke about this last season for a story in The Athletic about it, but it has been a roller coaster for you. And can you maybe explain to people who are listening who maybe don't know, like, what exactly you kind of battled early on, not getting drafted to the OHL and going to that Barry Colts camp and kind of that path that you've taken?
Yeah, that was, that's kind of the first step I'd say is to, I'm sure every kid wants to kind of get drafted and then to go to the OHL, or if, I guess you're growing up in Canada and all that, right? And and I just, wasn't selected, and then Barry Colts kind of asked me to go out to their camp, and I was kind of hesitant to go. I was always told I was going to go NCAA, study, work hard, but, get your schooling and, who knows, you can, get a scholarship and then get a good job after, really, right? But I decided to go to Barry's camp just to kind of measure myself up against other players that were drafted and everything like that. And then, Dale Howard Chuck and, Todd Miller and that organization there, that they they believed in me and gave me a chance when nobody else really did. And, you know, that kind of jumpstarted my career. And then again, I wasn't drafted my first year eligibility in the NHL. And that was kind of like, that was kind of a downfall. I ended up actually going to the draft and sitting all through the seven rounds. I was there with Dale and they were all kind of supporting me. And as I look back and I laugh and all, but I mean, at the time I was, shaken up a little bit, but again, I didn't let that stop me. And I used that as fuel. And, you know, thankfully the year after I went to the draft again, you know, it was a special moment to hear my name being called by the Calgary Flames. And, you know, and then just kind of, you know, paid my, I guess, time, docked in, and, you know, kept growing as a player and, you know, eventually made it.
I don't know if Brad Tree Living's ever told you this story, but he told it to me last season. The scouting staff was so passionate about taking you that year that Tree said that if he didn't go up there and say, you know, we take Andrew Mangiapane at this number, he's like, I probably would have got punched.
Yeah.
Because they were like, we're gonna get this guy right now, and if we don't, I'm gonna hit you with something. Yeah. Because we want this guy on our team so badly.
Yeah, I heard that story kind of. I don't even know who told me. It could have been Tree. It could have been the scouting staff and all that, right? But yeah, they were, I guess, pulling for me, and you know, obviously, I got to thank them, right? Obviously, they watched enough games. I think they were probably just. Scouting Razzie there, so I kind of maybe owe a little thanks to Razzie as well, because I'm sure the scouts came out to watch him play and they probably maybe noticed me.
I heard after you signed your deal, somebody asked Rasmus Anderson, for those listening, what he thought about your deal, and he was like, I'm gonna leave my wallet home in Sweden and Andrew can take the bill.
yeah that's a quote unquote what he said there. So obviously last year I had to pay for him. The year before that I had to pay for him. And now this year.
Yeah. Okay. That's something somebody says when there's a track record, right? Just, like I, not a new like, thing.
Yeah. He's a cheap guy. And now he, now he's got a kid and everything. So now it's school and everything like that. So.
So you're helping out with the,
helping out.
Helping with the tuition fund.
Yeah.
it's been a big summer for Calgary, not just you, right? I mean, things started out, look, we all know what happened with Johnny. We know the way that unfolded. From the outside, I think the Matthew Tkachuk saga, maybe not ending the way that it did, but the fact that he brought back Huberdeau and Weir, that those were the guys that came back in that deal. What was that as somebody, we know your deal wasn't done yet, but as somebody who was looking at, who was part of the Calgary Flames and, kind of had, you're as close to it as anybody. What were those couple days like for you and from free agency and the knowing, that you were bringing back Huberdeau and Weegar? That was a crazy, crazy stretch.
Yeah. It was kind of an interesting off season for the Flames there. Right. Obviously you knew that, Chucky, Johnny, and myself kind of were up, and looking kind of before, right, it would be probably tough to bring everybody back and knowing all that. But yeah, just obviously, those two guys are two great players, and I have a lot of respect for them on and off the ice. But it's tough to kind of see those guys leave. But at the end of the day, it is a business, and excited to kind of get those couple new guys coming in and excited for the season. I still think that we have a really good team. The majority of players are there, and I think everybody's ready to win and take that next step and keep continuing and growing on what we did last year. Right?
They're locked in for a few more years, right? Like they have you in the fold. They had the Huberdeau extension. Like, for as much uncertainty as it seemed like there was, especially heading into the offseason, like, you guys know the bones of the group that you're going to have moving forward for the next few years, right?
Yeah. And that's exactly kind of why I wanted to sign kind of a longer term deal, right? I like Calgary. I like the city, I like the teammates, management, everything about it. Right. So I'm happy that we were able to get a deal done, and I didn't have to go to arbitration and kind of get that one year deal. Wanted to sign a three or whatever longer term deal, and, happy that I'm able to stay, because I really like Calgary and I really like where this team is headed.
What was that process like for you, Andrew? Like, was it kind of sitting back and waiting for some of the other stuff to finish before you guys started really talking about stuff? Like, were you kind of just sitting and waiting for a while, and then it was like, all right, let's get moving on some of this stuff?
Yeah, and I think that's just kind of, you know, how it's kind of always going to be when you're a restricted player. Obviously, UFA is kind of, you know, all those A players are kind of, you know, the first priority to get them re-signed, right? Just on the timing of it and everything like that, right? So once, you know, they knew that Johnny wasn't coming back, then I think, you know, the talks and contract negotiations started to, you know, pick up.
Right? I mean, we know, like you said it yourself, you're trying to avoid the arbitration things, the arbitration stuff. I always love hearing guys, you know, whether it's arbitration horror stories or whatever, it's such a thing to be avoided for you guys, right? It's that day on the calendar where you're just like, all right, we got to have something in place so we can avoid doing that. That was front of mind for you, I would imagine.
Yeah, right. I don't think, you know, both parties kind of wanted to go to arbitration. You know, you hear some of those horror stories as well as a player and all that. But I think it was just kind of, you know, I wanted to be there. I wanted to stay. And, you know, I'm happy that the, you know, Flames kind of felt the same about me. And yeah, it was when, you know, when I guess we kind of expressed kind of how many years and everything like that, you know, obviously I was saying we want a longer term deal and they don't want that 1 year. Because, you know, I like Calgary and, you know, it's going to be an exciting season.
Did you feel like anything changed on their part after the Johnny and Matthew situations kind of resolved itself? Like how did that affect,
you know, yeah, I think
your end of things?
I think that's just kind of, you know, just kind of made it clear. Obviously, you know, Huberto wasn't extended or any of them, right? So it was just more, okay, now we need to figure out what we're going to do with kind of Mange and try to get him kind of locked up, right? I think obviously maybe they were trying to sign Johnny and Chucky to, you know, longer term deals and whatever, and all the money situation and the cap, and, you know, I know we're pretty close to the cap, and so I'm sure that they just had to, you know, go through, you know, just go step by step through that process and just try to figure it out that way.
Do you see, you know, a big opportunity for yourself this coming season? And not that there was an opportunity for you before, and obviously you scored 35 goals and 55 points and really established yourself as an important piece in this team. But do you see an opportunity for yourself to kind of step in and take on an even bigger role and continue establishing yourself for the Calgary Flames this coming season?
Yeah, I think there's going to be some more opportunity, right? Obviously, those are two big kind of players, both getting, you know, top minutes, top power play time. So obviously there's going to be room for kind of our whole team to kind of fill that void, right? You know, that's just not just me and all that. It's going to be a lot of opportunity for a lot of guys, and we're going to need that and need guys to kind of step up and fill those areas if we want to be a contending team.
What was the big difference for you just, you know, kind of stepping back to this season and knowing, I feel like, you know, last season, so the year that you went to the World Championships and had that great tournament for Canada, that was kind of the year where everyone started kind of paying more close attention outside the market. And then this year you come in with the 35 goal season and the 55 points. And it was kind of the breakout that everybody could see coming. What was the difference for you this season? Was it the confidence level, the comfort level, coaching under Daryl, combination? What kind of went into this year?
You know, combination of everything. I think it's playing this league, you need to kind of have confidence. You got to believe in yourself and believe in your teammates and everything like that, right? So I think maybe in my first couple seasons, I was a little shy, timid, whatever it is, starstruck. And, you know, once you start playing and, you know, getting put in more opportunity and, you know, playing the power play, playing the PK, and, you know, you get kind of, I don't know, but and you get the confidence, right? And that's the big thing in this league is, you know, I think I always believed in myself and knowing that I could play here, but it was took time for me to really kind of believe that, you know, I could be an everyday kind of point guy and produce, you know, kind of like I did in junior and, you know, throughout the years and all that, even in the minors and everything like that, right? It took me a while, but I think you know, now after World Juniors and just coming into this season, I just kind of wanted to play the way I know I can, right? And I was able to do that.
Do you see another step for yourself next season?
Yeah, right. Obviously, you know, there's going to be, like we were talking about before, there's going to be a lot more kind of opportunity, I think, right? And just kind of with myself, I think that, yeah, there is room to grow, right? There's going to be more ice time available, and, you know, maybe obviously there are two power play guys, so you could be slotted in there on the first power play. You know, there's new guys coming in, so you don't even know kind of who you're playing with and what's going on and all that situations. And, you know, you got to wait for camp and all that. But, you know, just me personally, I like I said, I'm, you know, playing now, I mean, after last season, you know, you have the confidence and the belief. And so I'm just kind of excited and, you know, excited to get going and start the season again.
So one of the things we did, Andrew, when we were planning to have you on, is we asked some fans if they had some questions. Yeah. A lot of them were just questions about bread.
Bread?
Bread-related stuff, yes.
Bread.
Subway sandwich bread, regular sandwich bread. We'll just skirt over those. I mean, have you gotten used to the, like, bread puns and stuff like that? Like, when did that even really start to catch on?
That's what I don't know. When did that start?
I started kind of my whole life, right? Obviously, kind of eat bread, right? So when I tell them, you know, yeah, it means eat bread, right? They're all, oh, wow, bread eater and everything like that. It's funny, right? I think this year kind of made me laugh. I think it was like the start of the season. Someone threw a loaf of bread on the ice and everything like that. And I saw it. I don't know if half our team knew what it meant or whatever it was. And I was laughing mm-hmm. over the ice. It's like, I don't even know how you bring that in the arena, but.
There's ways. You can smuggle stuff in.
Yeah.
It's like I heard the way that people bring the catfish in for Nashville games, they like saran wrap it to their body and then put their clothes over top, which is just
That's kind of gross.
Good passion though. Great job, everybody. Yeah. I love how much you love the Nashville Predators. Yeah. You know, and I remember the bread throwing incident because I'm pretty sure somebody asked after the game, like, what kind of loaf was it?
Yeah.
It was like a sourdough or something.
That was something. Yeah, it was funny. I was kind of shocked, right? So it was made me laugh.
Yeah. I would never use a bread pun personally to discuss.
No, never.
I've never. Don't check my Twitter account. There's nothing of the sort. I think some of the other kind of fun ones, you know, you talking about Rasmus and Rasmus having the comments about you're going to have to pay for stuff and he's going to leave his wallet back. I think people were wanting to know, like, who's the best trash talker on the team? And basically, like, why is it Rasmus Anderson? Unless it's someone different.
No, I'd say, Rasmus kind of up there, right? I know he likes to chirp kind of on and off the ice. He likes to chirp his friends, guys he doesn't like, everything like that. He just, I don't know. He likes the English language now that he knows it. He likes to use all the words and the vocabulary, I'd say, right? When he first came to Barrie, he was very shy and quiet. I think that was just because he was kind of unsure of some words, right? So then when he started, you know, his English started getting better, he started getting more comfortable and everything like that. So then the sky was the limit for him then after he knew all the words. So he would be the number one.
That's funny. I guess jumping off that, you guys have had such a long path together from Barrie mm-hmm. to now, and you both kind of had these really big seasons this year. You know, Rasmus really showing his ability to be a number one D in this league and top pair guy, and you showing your ability. How nice has it been, or what's it been like to have somebody going along this path for so long with you and kind of having this shared experience? It's obviously everyone's path is a bit unique, and you play different positions, but just to have Rasmus kind of through all that with you.
No, it's great, right? Obviously, you know, we've played together almost, I don't even know, 10 seasons now. So, right, it's always good to have, you know, a friend there, right? I classify him as one of my, you know, best friends, you know, maybe the best friend I have in hockey and all that, right? We've always kind of grew up together and, you know, we started off, whatever, 17 years old, 18 years old, whatever, however old we were in Barrie, right? So you kept growing as people and, you know, on and off the ice. So it's been a crazy ride. And I think, you know, our you know, just going to Stockton together and, you know, living together that first year, it was just, it was a lot of comfort just knowing that you have, you know, someone there and, you know, that, you know, you have a friend, right? It's always tough when you go to places that, you know, you don't know or a different team or anything like that. And you're going into, you know, even a new classroom, whatever it is, and you don't know anyone, new school, things like that, right? It's always tough, but it was good that, you know, I only knew Rasmus kind of, right? And, you know, it was good that I had a friend there. And, you know, it's crazy kind of how our journeys, you know, we're kind of on the same path, right? We played the same number of, you know, seasons in the minors, and we jumped to the NHL the same season and everything like that. So it's been kind of crazy that way, but, you know, it's been awesome.
That's great. We got a couple more from fans and we'll let you go, Andrew. I think one, you know, we did have some fans, and it's probably something we should have asked too. Have you reached out and talked to Jonathan Huberdeau yet since he's been part of the team and signed?
No, we added him to our kind of group chat, right? And said, you know, a few things in there, but no, nothing yet, right? So it'll be nice to kind of go back and, you know, see the new guys and, you know, get to know them, right? I've heard good things about them.
Does Rasmus know how much money he makes now? Because he might have someone else to hit up to pick up bills.
It's very Rasmus, when you get him, he'll start going after his money too and everything. So it's only a matter of time for Rasmus.
I feel so bad. This is terrible.
Yeah, this is good.
I'm so sorry. It's good. You know, one of the ones we did get is, what is the best thing about having Daryl Sutter as a coach? And is it just watching his media sound bites?
Yeah, some of his media is good to see and everything like that. But the thing with Daryl is he wants the best for you, right? And then that's important, I think, in a coach, right? When you know a coach is, you know, he might be tough on you or might show you something that you don't agree or anything like that. But it's more just, okay, he wants the best for you and he wants the best for the team and you want to win, right? And, you know, that's why we're all kind of there. We're there to win and win hockey games, right? And he brings kind of the best out in everybody, right? So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, top or how do I say it? You know, best seasons, a lot of career best for guys this year. And, you know, and that goes to him, right? He pushes you and wants you to be the best that you can be every night.
Final question. And I'm not even sure if this is just a joke because they're making fun of, it's not even making fun of. Some people want to know if you watch The Sopranos and what your favorite Sopranos episode is. Is this just like an Italian thing? And they're like, well, his last name, he must watch The Sopranos.
No, I haven't watched The Sopranos and all that. I've seen a few kind of bits here and there, but nothing that I can say is my favorite episode or anything like that.
I recently purchased a Bobby Bacala t-shirt. If you know who that is, he is my personal favorite character on The Sopranos. He's just a sweet, innocent one who doesn't do anything.
You got some time to kill. Camp starts in a month. It's on HBO Max. You can knock it out.
All right. Yeah. Maybe I do that.
You should pick it up. So I guess I've been led astray on this question. They were like, what did they even say? Like, what is his favorite Sopranos episode? I know he's seen it. Yeah. So
there it is. Not. Discrimination. Both through, right?
Yeah. There you go. Well, thank you so much. And thanks for sticking with some of the silly ones. And apologies to Rasmus Anderson for everything that's been said today.
In my punching bag, so it's all good.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much, Andrew. We appreciate having you on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
That was good stuff from Andrew. You're catching up with an old buddy. You wrote something very good about him in the fall, and like his, you know, his come up to turning into a 35 goal scorer or whatever. Even at that point, it was clear that the breakout was on, right? Because he was so on such a heater to start the season. It's a big part of things in Calgary moving forward.
I wouldn't say an old buddy.
He's your best friend.
Yeah, that's super professional. Yes, my close personal friend.
No, you missed. Okay, you clearly don't listen to the Tuesday show. Craig, you know how many best friends Craig has?
Greg,
excuse me.
Super inappropriate.
Bill Zito.
I wonder.
Bill Zito, your best friend.
Right. I do think that, you know, anyone who was paying attention to the Flames or watching Andrew Mangiapane kind of knew that this kind of season was coming from him. And that was kind of the story that I wrote before last season was, you know, can Andrew Mangiapane, who was once an afterthought in this sport, you know, establish himself as a cornerstone piece, the Calgary Flames. And he did just that this season. And I think that was something, again, that you could see coming. I mean, he's always been up there in terms of 5-on-5 scoring per 60. You know, he's a very impactful, effective player in the minutes he gets. And I think, you know, he got a lot of like middle six, even bottom 6 minutes over the last couple of years. And that's never changed the way that he can impact a game. He drives play. He's good defensively. He's good in the neutral zone. He's a smart player. He's a smaller guy, but he's really hard to push off the puck. And he doesn't shy away. Like if, you know, a 6'5" defender is coming at him on the boards, he's not going to move away. He's going to dig in and try to get the puck out. So, you know, he's an important player to the Flames even more so now. But like this isn't just Kachuk and Gaudreau are gone, so now Mangiapane can arrive. Like he was already here. He was another important piece of the roster. And I do think that he'll be able to kind of step in and take on more of a role because he's still pretty young. He's only 26. Like, and when you look at his path, and for people who haven't read the story, it is on The Athletic. You know, he was a late bloomer. He was undrafted to the OHL, undrafted to the NHL, depth draft pick, all that stuff. So, you know, this isn't exactly a guy he's been around, but it's not like, oh, we've been waiting for 7 years for Andrew Mangiapane to finally show up.
I'm just glad to see him overcome a clear case of anti-Italian discrimination against him earlier in his career. It's real.
Okay.
All right. I asked people what they would talk about if they had a hockey podcast that they'd do in a couple minutes. And these answers are all terrible because nobody has any clue what we're supposed to talk about here. A lot of people saying baseball. A lot of people asking me to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback situation, which is
a hot
topic of conversation here.
Let me go put on my Pitt football shirt.
Yeah, I don't know where you got that.
Because I love Kenny Pickett.
Are these good? There is a boy at World Juniors who wanted ice cream. This is what somebody said to me. Talk about the World Juniors boy who wanted ice cream. This kid, Martin Slavins, who plays for the Latvia team, broke off an interview because he really, really wanted to get ice cream after scoring a goal. I hope that happened for this kid.
Where's the ice cream truck?
Good question.
There's so many. Do you want to just talk about Hal Gill?
Whose legacy is this is great. This is just BS fodder for talking. Whose legacy is in more jeopardy if they don't win a cup in the next few years? Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews?
We're talking about their legacies already.
Yeah, those guys are old.
Mm-hmm. My God. I don't know.
Well, McDavid's legacy is definitely in more jeopardy because he is going to, if he doesn't win a cup, that means he's going to have continued losing in Edmonton, whereas Austin Matthews will have the shine of playing for the Arizona Coyotes, and that'll buy him a few more years. Oh, it'll change God. His legacy a little bit. It'll remove some of the pressure from him.
Right? I'm not even going to engage in that. That is just
you should.
I don't think so. I don't feel like having the wrath of both Oilers fans and Leafs fans and potentially Arizona fans who don't think you're funny directed at me. So
here's a great question. great submission from our buddy Justin Morissette. The world is crumbling. Climate is lashing out in all kinds of ways. The rich get richer. The poor get poorer. So how does all this affect the Leafs? And that is my question to you, Haley, as a Toronto boomeranger now. The climate crisis, how does it affect the Toronto Maple Leafs? Go!
They might not be able to have the same state-of-the-art facilities. I don't know.
Ryan says, Ryan's RL Not Stein says he'd like to talk about the fact that Evan Rodriguez doesn't have a contract yet. We talked about that for a second. Haley,
Evan Rodriguez.
Yeah, you were the conductor of the Evan Rodriguez train at the start of the offseason, weren't you?
Yeah, I thought that he made a ton of sense for the Flames. I put him on like every possible kind of story and list that I made that had to do with like who could the Flames go and sign, because, you know, we've talked about this. I mean, I feel like if you're a Penguins fan, Rodriguez is the guy that you were kind of waiting and waiting and waiting for that offensive pop to happen. And it happened like, for a bit.
He had like
and it was like, oh my God, Evan Rodriguez.
He had three different seasons. He was in a fugue state in the fall, I think, with the way he was scoring goals. And then it was like,
I think Dom short-circuited watching Evan Rodriguez at the start of the season.
he broke Dom's little spreadsheet thing for a little bit there.
Mm-hmm.
And then possibly started the butterfly effect that led to them losing that series against the Rangers with a really bad penalty he took. Yeah. I would sign Evan Rodriguez for
like $2 million. Yeah,
versatile.
He's effective.
Versatile player. He can play pretty much anywhere in a middle six, I would say.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I think Rodriguez is in the kind of camp of, and maybe even a little more elevated, because he did show a flash of that kind of offensive production that he could bring to the table. But when you talk about some of the guys that are left or had been left for a while, it's like Zach Aston Reese, Evan Rodriguez, Tyler Mott.
These are the times.
Sonny Milano. These are the kind of guys who had been or have been. I don't know if Tyler Mott. I think I saw people wanting him, like, how can the Rangers bring Tyler Mott back? But again, I think they're still on the board, but it's just like, that's kind of the kind of tier crop of useful depth players that we're looking at right now. And I think if you could pluck a couple out of that group, I think Evan Rodriguez and Sonny Milano are the two that are like, these guys have some of that offensive pop. They're not just, you know, Zach Aston Reese, again, another Penguin who people were probably just like, they're waiting for him to become maybe a little bit more, but he's still really effective and versatile and good at very specific things.
Yeah. He's a good
PK
defensive winger. Yeah. I mean, he's got some value.
I like Evan Rodriguez. Maybe he's asking for too much. I think someone like Sonny Milano not being signed is strange. I think they're probably battling a bit of the, what they think he's worth versus what other teams he's worth, especially after not getting a qualifying offer by the Anaheim Ducks. So that's kind of, I wonder how long he's going to be sitting there for before a team either just gives him what he wants or they kind of back off what their, you know, potential ask is. So there's some interesting ones out there, but I do like Evan Rodriguez. I think it's a little strange that he's not signed. I wonder if this is like are these guys the like Kadri plan Bs? Like everyone's waiting to see like what happens with Kadri. Then they can move on to the depth guys. I don't know. It's just been a really weird kind of free agency year, honestly.
I mean, these are the guys who the smart GMs are going to, I guarantee you there our hockey ops departments that are just like, all right, we're gonna wait, and we have X amount of players that we know aren't gonna get signed until the middle of August, and these guys are gonna start coming on the cheap. You're gonna see a lot of good players signed for $1.1 million or whatever, and that is how you build out effective rosters. So,
well, not something to bring it back to the how does this affect the Leafs? The Leafs are good at that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're bad at certain other things, but.
Yes, but, you know, I feel like if you're a front office who's tight to the cap, you're probably trying to take a Kyle Dubas page and look at the next Michael Bunting.
Every year.
Where are they going to get the Michael Bunting type value?
Yeah.
You know, and I think these are some of the guys that they are valuable to your roster if you can bring them in on the cheap. But if you don't want to be overpaying for these players either, because that's when you run into issues, is when you have too many guys making like $3 to $5 million when they should be making $1 to $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other ones on this Twitter?
A big question.
Red. Okay.
From our buddy Brian Badko, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Why is armpit an anatomical term, but leg pit is not?
I already asked this.
No, you didn't.
At the top of the show.
Oh, you did? I honestly thought that was an offline conversation. That's right.
You thought I was just talking about leg pit?
It's happened before.
No, it hasn't. That is.
Yeah, I think we actually got an answer here. Your armpit is not on the same joint as your elbow, which is true.
Oh, so I guess your leg pit's your leg elbow.
Yeah, the armpit. This guy is in the replies. He's making some strong points. He swayed me.
Your armpit is your inner elbow? This is so stupid. When is Mendez back?
Oh my god! What is he? He's on vacation.
Yeah.
I'm sure, I'll come back.
Why did I come back from vacation?
I don't know. Because there was no one else to host on Monday. It would have been me and Shapiro or something.
Yeah. The hated Sean Shapiro.
Yeah. Even worse, me and Max Boltman. Oh,
wait. Oh. Should we throw sweet boy Peter Baugh under the bus for the loyal listeners who are still listening to this podcast? So everybody, we're at the draft in Montreal. Everyone's at a pub. We're going for dinner. It's not the drinking adult hours. It's everyone's there. People are going for dinner at some Irish place. I forget what it was called. The waitress was very mean to me, so I left. She watched me walk into the bar. As an aside, I walk into the bar to go say hello to like Frank Saravalli, who's in the other room. And she goes, "Stop ordering from the bar. I'll be right there." And I was just like, And then I left. I was like, I'm not buying food from you.
Yeah.
You're so mean. But anyways, before that happened, we got this really special treat from Peter Baugh. Sean introduces himself to sweet Peter.
Oh my God. I forgot. I didn't realize this is what you're talking about.
Oh, did you think I was talking about the Shirley Temples?
Yep. This is even funnier.
Peter goes to Sean, or Sean goes to Peter and says, like, hey, like, Sean Gentile, nice to, like, I'm Sean. You didn't even say Gentile. He's like, I'm Sean. Nice to meet you, man. And he's like, we met. We had coffee and a really nice time in Detroit.
Yep. I said, nope, that was Sean Shapiro. He was like,
oh. And Peter was like, but even before that, there was like a back and forth. Peter was like, we've met before. And you're like, no. And he's like, we met in Detroit, Sean.
I'm like, nope, wrong one. I know.
We had coffee in Traverse City. And you're like, nope.
Sorry, buddy. I know we both have beards and work for the same place, kind of look alike, whatever.
Yeah, and then we went inside and he ordered a dirty Shirley,
which is a Shirley Temple with booze in it. Point of fact, Peter Baugh, it's you have made a powerful enemy. I will not stand to be spoken to that way.
Yeah.
Just
you must respect me.
Just kidding, buddy.
Young boy.
Is that it?
Anyway, I think so.
We're done. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody. Make sure you subscribe to The Athletic and The Athletic Hockey Show wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple.
We found out,
Bean.
Me and Cousins found out our start date for September. I think the Tuesday show will be back, I believe, on September 20th. So
why would anybody listening to this right now care about that?
Everybody can calm down. Leave me alone. Stop calling my home.
You don't even have a home phone, do you?
You don't know that.
That's right. You seem like the type that would have like a duck phone in your house, like from Jersey Shore, a phone that's shaped like a duck that quacks when people call.
I'm not comfortable answering any personal questions like this. Please move on.
For people that listen to Sean's other podcasts, this is a lie. He likes to drop hints about where he lives.
They're getting very specific. I think the walls are starting to close.
Hey, you know that Wendy's that's on the corner of blah, blah, blah? My apartment is 3 blocks to the northwest.
It's like I see how many turns. I live 4 turns away from Thing X. I think people have triangulated my location.
Right. Yeah. Anyways, thanks everyone for listening. Subscribe. We appreciate you. Today was great because of Andrew Mangiapane and everything else was just us trying to get by. I wonder if people realize, just not even realize, do you think people, like, are we unhinged when Ian's not around?
Yeah. He's a dad.
Do people enjoy that? Or do you want some more order?
I'm sure it's split down the middle, honestly.
It's like, this isn't the Monday show I'm used to. This is weird. What are they talking about? They're all over the place.
What's wrong with Anyways. Ian? What's wrong with Ian? He sounds sick.
Menda sounds funny.
He sounds like a dork. I'm that velvety smooth AM radio voice.
Yeah.
Ian's back.
He got a cold and now his voice is all messed up for just this episode. He'll be fine next week.
All right. Goodbye, Haley Salvian.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening.